This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to our mini series of podcasts that we're running called What Does Net Zero Mean to You? I'm Lindsay Bass, Head of UK Consultant Relations, and joined, as always, by Laura Brown, Head of Client Solutions. Welcome, Laura.
Hello.
Hello. So just by a bit of context for everyone, if you're new to the mini-series, it's become clear to us that everyone is talking about net zero at the moment. There's a lot of noise. More people, both investors and asset managers, are signing up to something called net zero. Given COP, the attention is particularly strong on the investment community to be doing something. So the noise levels have ratcheted up a lot. The issue that we find is that there's still a real lack of consistency, both in terms of what that means, what people are doing, and more importantly, how they're doing it. So we decided to pull together the great and the good of the asset owner and asset advisor community to compare and contrast views on what net zero really means to them. But before we invite the guests in for today, Laura, tell me, what have you been up to over the last week or so?
Well, I thought I'd just share a bit of reflections on client meetings over the last few weeks, because it feels like the world has sort of changed in quite a subtle manner away from a sort of starting assumption amongst clients that when you're looking at an investment portfolio, you want to have access to the widest sort of possible sphere of investments. And really, the question would be, why wouldn't I invest in as many different things as I can? I sort of sense a subtle shift where now in the meetings we're having with clients and in all asset classes, really, there's more of a question of, well, why would I invest in that? Certain companies, certain types of activities. I feel like clients are thinking, you know what, we can actually be a lot more picky about how we do things. And as looking across all the investment opportunities that are out there, you know, that kind of idea of being selective, trying to raise the bar in terms of company policies and practices.
So it's really interesting. I was very kindly asked to moderate a panel last week about the topic of investing sustainably and whether to do so via an active or index kind of passive approach. There were some fantastic comments that came out of that. One, obviously, the growth of sustainable indices. New benchmarks that are coming out. I guess the question was, well, if all the asset advisors are advising their asset owners to move assets towards these sustainable benchmarks, what happens to market cap? Does market cap kind of become redundant? The lovely phrase of stranded benchmarks was thrown in there as a kind of concept. And I guess the other pivotal question is when, because obviously trying to fight against what market cap is doing right now is much easier said than done. So on that front, because we've got two fantastic guests today to join us, I would very much like to invite them in, which is we've got Claire Jones, who is Head of Responsible Investing, and also Dan Mikulskis, both partners within the investment consulting practice at Lane Clark and Peacock, or LCP. Welcome, both of you.
Hello. Thank you for inviting us to join you.
Hi, Laura. Hi, Lindsay. Great to be here.
Hi, Dan. We are a little bit nervous, as we know LCP do have their own podcast, although other podcasts are also available. We are nervous having experts in the room. So I'm going to move swiftly on in that case. Claire, have you made a commitment to net zero? And if so, what is it?
Yes, well, LCP certainly has made a net zero commitment. And the main one is being one of the first signatories of the Net Zero Investment Consultants Initiative, which was launched in September. And so we, along with 11 other investment consultancies so far, have signed up to 9 commitments around net zero. The headline one being to integrate net zero alignment into all of our advice as soon as practical and within the next 2 years. So it means we're going to have much bigger emphasis on net zero in the way that we're advising our investment clients and supporting that with the work we do in terms of assessing investment managers and in our industry collaborations to make sure that when we're working with others in the industry, we're helping to overcome the barriers and develop the solutions that are needed in order to achieve net zero emissions across the global economy.
Fantastic. That's a really proactive stance to be taking. I noted, as you mentioned, and I'll just pick up on this before handing over, but one of the key things I think that you guys have done is that integrating it into the way managers are judged and assessed. How has the reaction actually been from the investment management community on that?
Yes, so as part of the Net Zero Investment Consultant Initiative, we've made a general commitment to integrate net zero into the way that we assess managers, but we've gone one step further, which is to say that from 1st of April 2022, we will require investment managers to be signatories of the Net Zero Asset Manager Initiative in order to be eligible to get a buy rating for one of their products. So we're regarding that as a minimum standard that we would like all investment managers to meet. And we're supporting that with a set of net zero expectations, which then sets out what we think good looks like. Because as we know, the net zero commitment under the Asset Manager Initiative is just a starting point. There are different ways in which that can be implemented. So we want to make sure that it is being implemented in a robust and extensive manner. And also making sure that we've got net zero and climate risk and opportunities more generally woven into our assessments of managers, and hence impacting all of our manager selection and monitoring advice to clients. In terms of the reaction we've been getting, I think it's been a pretty positive reaction. We haven't seen a great deal of pushback. I mean, the number of investment managers who already signed up to the initiative is large and growing all the time. So we're not expecting that to be a significant barrier. And indeed, we're obviously hoping that by making this announcement, we're encouraging more investment managers to sign up to this important initiative.
So on that note, Dan, how are you approaching it in terms of sort of practical steps to kind of monitor what managers are doing, the way you're sort of looking at strategic asset allocation, that kind of thing? I don't know if it feeds in there. What are the sorts of things you'd highlight in terms of how all of this fits together in action terms?
Yeah, thanks. I mean, there's just so many aspects to talk to, isn't there? But I suppose this probably all started around about a year ago when we were really getting a lot of demand from a small number of very large clients who really wanted to put net zero commitments in place. And we did a lot of work to support the advice really to get them comfortable with doing that. And it's been very rewarding to see them sort of come out and make those commitments, some of them quite recently, and some of them being counted in the 140 trillion that was announced just at COP26. So very rewarding to have been able to support them in doing that. And so some of that was sort of sketching out the frameworks they would use, giving an idea of what it would mean in sort of different asset classes. And there you've got a whole different range of the way they manage assets. So some of them have internal asset managers sort of thing, manage a lot of it. Some of them are using third-party asset managers. So trying to understand what it would actually look like for externally managed assets, what it would look like for internally managed assets, the differences between sort of equities, corporate bonds, big question of what you're doing with gilts, what can you do in private markets. Trying to work out those sort of things was kind of the first leg of a lot of our work. And then as we're talking more recently, as it's become more popular for managers to join the net zero asset managers, try and take a view on what that ought to look like for those sort of different funds. And it was really interesting, wasn't it, seeing the progress report coming out just a couple of weeks ago. Obviously, the new signatories was great, but really interesting to see the 43 signatories putting a bit more flesh on the bones, if you like, of what they're doing there. And I think that does give quite a good framework for engaging with managers, actually, just being able to say, when are you planning to bring these funds within the scope of that perimeter? What actual framework are you using to sort of structure your net zero commitments? I think that's proving a reasonably good way of engaging on it.
Yeah, it seems like another good example of something where if we can try to get some consistency across an industry, then it helps people to sort of scrutinize what's going on. So one thing I find interesting, and clients have been asking me in meetings, is, so we've put in place a sort of net zero aligned mandate or whatever it might be. How are they going to know that we're doing a good job going forward? And how are they going to sort of balance that against investment performance and achieving those sort of, you know, the standard attributes that we all need from our portfolios? So kind of interested in how you're thinking about that, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, isn't it? It's a really, really good question. And I think a lot of us have been through a bit of a journey in terms of how we think of this. And you sort of start off thinking it's all about tracking emissions and it's about a sort of accounting exercise over emissions. And then you kind of realize that's not really that helpful. Then you start thinking maybe it's a sort of a modeling exercise, and you go down the route of looking at models in a lot of detail, and you realize that's part of the issue, but maybe not all of it. And where we've really got to is really just thinking about this concept of alignment. which kind of really simplifies it. So how many companies in the portfolio are aligned according to some definition, which you've got to obviously define what you mean by that. But, you know, in other words, having a reasonably robust target to be consistent with sort of net zero. And not, you often find that sort of 20-25% of a lot of portfolios will be aligned today. And then just trying to say, well, how are we going to try and increase that over the next 10 years? And the reason that's helpful is that's something that the asset manager can influence a little bit more directly, either through engagement with the companies or through the selection of the companies in the portfolio. And so then you're down to the question of what's the balance of using those two things and how fast are you trying to push?
So I think one of the interesting points that brings out is it kind of takes me on to our next question, which is around data, because as you said, Dan, you know, in that journey, you kind of realize, yes, let's go down this data route. Well, no, hold on, maybe that's missing one bigger picture. And then you go down another data route. And, you know, I guess that my kind of challenge to this alignment point is, what does that even mean? And then how do you track that? Like, what's the right data point to track alignment? And, you know, because it still goes back to that same point of kind of measurement. So Claire, I know that you've done a huge amount of work in kind of trying to kind of identify constructive data points. Wondered if you had some thoughts you wanted to share on that.
I mean, you're right, Lindsay. I mean, data is one of the really thorny issues around net zero and managing climate risk more generally. We're at the stage now where some of our largest clients are having to put together their first TCFD reports and start to gather and report on metrics for their portfolios. And it's striking just how difficult that is once you get outside listed equities and corporate bonds. A lot of the time our clients, of course, are very reliant on investment managers for that. And it's really encouraging to see that a lot of emphasis is being put on that. We've gone through an exercise recently with a client trying to identify what its 25 investment managers can provide already in the terms of data and what it's going to be able to provide in the next 6 months. We were pleasantly surprised at how much progress is predicted within the next 6 months. In terms of data points, you know, emissions is such an obvious starting point. We've been saying that that's not terribly useful. In terms of alignment, we're particularly focusing on the existence of science-based target initiative metrics at the moment, because that's a sort of an independent accreditation, which helps you to easily gauge the credibility of a company's emissions targets. And we're also looking to collect information from investment managers on things like engagement with portfolio companies, because we think that's really important as well.
Yeah, and just to build on that super, super quick, I mean, I guess going back a little while, a common knock you heard against ESG generally and particularly climate was, oh, the data's not there, the data's not good enough sort of thing. And I do still hear that some of the time, and I do sort of push back against that reasonably strongly, because I do think there is a lot of data there. It's more about how you use it and figuring out what matters.
Obviously, we don't want to let perfect be the enemy of good, but there are still sort of lots of very challenging, thorny issues where, you know, sometimes there is a little bit more detail to be thought about, or it creates a lot of debate. And so really interested, Dan, in terms of the conversations you're having with clients and the decisions that are being made, where does everyone get really hot under the collar? What are the sort of thorniest issues that can cause issues?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, my first observation would just be that quite often, one thing I've observed is that there was increasingly a bit of a gap opening up in the industry between where sort of asset managers were at one end, at sort of, let's call it the cutting edge of thinking in quite a lot of detail about these things, and then where clients and trustee boards were, which was a few steps behind. So often I've felt what was needed is to try and just bridge that a little bit and just get trustee boards started with some simple ways to look across the whole portfolio. So almost take a bit of a step back rather than get into those detailed discussions about sectors and things, just trying to look at the whole piece. And so that's something we've sort of been trying to do. But you're absolutely right. You very quickly get onto those sort of detailed questions. And I think that there's a few of them that spring to mind. I suppose one of them I think is becoming clearer and clearer is about where are you using divestment and where aren't you, and particularly around fossil fuels. And I think especially with some of the where you can hear some of the mood music around COP26 going, particularly around oil and gas, I think, and those sort of questions. It'll be really interesting where people are coming out on that. For what it's worth, I think there's room for a range of views. I'm not sure we should always be pushing to say this is a one answer. I do think, you know, well-informed investors can come to different views sort of on the same thing. But particularly if it does become the case that particular industries or sectors need to effectively be retired in order to meet 1.5 degree pathways, how that happens through an investor lens, I just think that's difficult, basically. I don't know that there's really a precedent for that. And I can see that being quite a tough sort of road to go down. So that's probably true in coal, probably true in oil and gas. And then on the other side, some of those sectors that clearly are important for the long term, but have a really tricky transition ahead of them. So the likes of cement, aluminium, airlines, you might say shipping. Some really interesting conversations around how you're looking at those sectors and making sure that whatever way you're looking at them is not just going to incentivize managers to sort of disinvest, but yet you are sorting out the kind of the more aligned companies from the less aligned companies there. That's where that conversation often ends up.
I do wonder about different types of trustees and different governance budgets in relation to this, and whether for some of the risks involved in the harder to transition sectors might lead to kind of sense of maybe that's not a place people necessarily want to be invested unless they've got the time and sort of governance budget to invest in really understanding that in detail. But that's a kind of tricky one. I don't know how you're seeing that space.
That's a great question. I think what we're starting to see is tailoring of sort of net zero programs to different types of trustee board with different governance budgets. As I said, this first cohort of schemes that have embraced it are generally those with a bigger governance budget, putting a decent sort of governance oversight process around it, which is absolutely right to ensure it's a really robust thing that can't easily be sort of knocked and criticized. But the really good question is how we can kind of evolve that a little bit to work with those smaller schemes with slightly smaller governance budgets who still want to do this. And of course, a big role there for asset managers. But the tension there is that there's rightly a bit of a push away from trustees kind of just simply outsourcing everything to asset managers and just saying, right, you know, we've outsourced everything to asset managers, it's their problem. There's a bit of a push in regulation, and rightly, I would say, towards pushing some of that back into the trustees' court to say, well, you've kind of got to take a view on this. Your manager might be implementing it. So that, I think, is a really interesting area of where we end up for those more mid-sized kind of clients who do want to do net zero targets. What they're going to end up needing to own and what they can sort of push down to asset managers, what the role of consultants is in there. That is kind of, I think, a really live area right now that's all being determined, I think.
Clearly, corporates are putting a lot of pressure on the pension schemes to sort of commit to net zero. And not just that, but to show that they've cut carbon emissions by X percent upfront, you know. Perhaps, I don't know, but a feeling like making a sort of immediate statement is as important as the longer term picture. I suppose it's in some ways a quick win for a company to be able to say its pension scheme is on the right journey compared with actually changing its own operations. And so, yeah, interested in anything you've seen on that side and how those conflicts are managed.
Yeah, I mean, it's been really interesting to see the role of the corporate side, and quite often they are quite vocal on this. But it's interesting, it can go a number of different ways. I mean, one way it can go is that if you've had people from the corporate who are quite senior, who've come under a lot of pressure themselves on for their sustainability credentials on the corporate side, they can actually be quite skeptical when it comes to investing more generally. And they can sort of say, well, look, we've really done this, but we know there's a lot of greenwash out there. So kind of actually worried that the pension scheme might invest in other companies that haven't done it as sort of as well as they have. But you know, it's great to be working with informed people that have worked through some of these issues themselves on the corporate side. And I've certainly learned a little bit from them as well. But you can get a real range of perspectives, which is common to this whole area, isn't it? Pushing both for and against what you're trying to do.
How are you managing the challenges of those that, I mean, you've talked a little bit about it from the sponsor level, but there's so many other kind of differing kind of stakeholders in the food chain. How are you managing those? Claire, what's been your experience of, I guess, you know, either managing the internal or external stakeholders' differing views on this?
Well, I think the good thing is that there is more consensus these days. I'm seeing far less pushback on discussions around net zero, specifically climate change more generally, than I was 6-12 months ago. The conversations we're having now are much more informed conversations, really sort of trying to sort of dig into the details. So for example, one of the questions raised earlier about, well, what are the financial implications of investing in line with net zero? How can trustees be confident that they're not compromising financial returns? So the pushback is more about the specifics of implementation rather than necessarily the concept. And I think it is really important that investment consultants are taking a stand on this. You know, it's part of our job to explain to clients why climate change does pose big risks to their investments and why we believe that investing in line with net zero is in long-term best financial interests of our clients.
I always feel bad about ending on a bit of a negative, but this for me is the sort of negative that often comes up in trustee meetings when you've presented on anything, which is hopefully the trustees have bought into what you've been talking about, feel good, everybody's thinking, well, this sounds like a good idea, a good thing to be doing. And then somebody on the trustee board will go, wait a minute, what are we missing? We'd like to ask Elgin or our advisors, what could go wrong here that we haven't thought about? What are the dodgy things that are underlying all of this? You know, the sort of groupthink, I don't know what it might be, the things that trustees should be worried about that could go wrong with moving down this route. And I don't know, Dan, if you've got any thoughts on that. And obviously, turning it to a positive, what can be done to mitigate the risks of the worst things happening?
Yeah, it always sounds like a good question, doesn't it? But it's always a slightly annoying question, the kind of what are we missing kind of thing, because it's difficult. I mean, yeah, you sort of alluded to the groupthink point, and I get slightly frustrated with people kind of positioning this as, oh, you know, everyone's talking about it, you know, it's noisy, must be a bandwagon kind of thing, right? And I kind of, I suppose that's a sort of objectively true, but I sort of push back against that being a sort of a negative thing. It's like, you know, it's the big powerful social, you know, movement of our time, and so aligning with it seems like a pretty sensible thing to do. But yeah, no, I can see why people ask that question. I suppose there's a few things. I mean, someone asked me the other day where I'd like to see this in sort of 3 or 5 years, and I would love for this to have sort of been tested in a real kind of bear market or a real difficult markets period of time. I mean, we're obviously sitting here now, arguably off the back of a 10 plus year sort of bull market. There's lots of money sort of sloshing around the system generally, and people, I guess, have got time and effort to focus on this. But to keep that focus going through a period of time where people were worried about other things, I think would be sort of quite nice to see. And then I suppose another way is just that, I mean, the greenwashing is a really good point. So it could be that you get to a point where so many managers and funds are trying to claim that they're sort of net zero compatible that you sort of lose a sense of which way is up kind of thing. You think, well, hang on, do I actually need to do something to be net zero compatible, or do I just stay with all my funds because everyone's going to change at some point or has already changed? And that probably is a decent chance that's where we end up. But I suppose that's where you need a good consultant to sort the wheat from the chaff. Couldn't imagine who that might be.
And that feeds into the ever-present question of, if all of this isn't yet priced in, is moving to net zero sooner rather than later from a portfolio perspective actually sort of advantageous on the risk-return trade-off as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question, isn't it? I mean, and the question of whether it's priced in or not is just such a difficult one, and people have different sort of philosophical beliefs. I mean, for what it's worth, my answer is always, how could it possibly be? Certainly across all sectors and all securities and all different asset classes, I really struggle to see how that could be consistently priced in. I think maybe in certain sectors, you could argue it is certainly a little bit, you know, oil and gas has kind of been well known for a while as a transition, but in other sectors, I just don't think you see that differentiation between companies that are aligned and not aligned. Just doesn't seem like you see as much differentiation as maybe you sort of should be there. But I think that is definitely one of the more, let's call it one of the more sensible pushbacks against this is right to always say, look, what's priced and what's not, because that's always what matters in markets, isn't it? It's what's actually priced today. So that I think is a really good point to keep coming back to, because that, yeah, whatever conclusions you draw today on market pricing could be different in a year, couldn't it?
Yeah, that's such an important point, isn't it? And that's the point, actually. I think that's the biggest point about this being selective, because you're saying, well, if I'm going to buy something and I might not sell it, then I need to be really careful about what it is I buy. And that's true, I think, in private markets. It's also true to some degree in credit, that you'd rather not have to sell it if you don't have to. And so that does steer us towards really looking at the risk aspects of net zero portfolios and saying, well, within a particular sector, it might be the case that these carbon emissions might reduce over time, but how confident am I about that if I want to hold this bond for the next 15 years? And so I think that time horizon point and liquidity point and the way in which pension schemes are moving down that journey is absolutely fundamental to perhaps why this has taken hold to the extent it has in the last 12 months, because it really fits with the philosophy there.
So I think that probably brings us to the end of our time today. So thank you so much to Claire Jones and Dan Mikulskis for joining us today. We will wrap up, and I thank you all to our listeners for listening. Please, if you haven't already, please do subscribe to LGM Talks wherever you get your podcasts. And we look forward to another episode soon. Thank you.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating, or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous, on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and general investment management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website, LGIM.com.